The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect the views of CKLN Radio Incorporated. The following program contains views which some might find offensive. Listener discretion is advised.
Our story opens today in a really ugly building in the really dreadful little country of Canada.
Pleasure to be with you.
I appreciate you very much, the hard work that's going on.
It's too much! This has got to stop!
He's your hot out.
Pleasure to be with you.
He's your heart out.
And there you go.
I was just a little fella from the neighborhood, but now I'm getting busy, y'all. Life is all good. Everybody's wanting to be in my clique, but all they can do for me is suck my
hard work.
Good night, Susie. I'm Paul Kangas wishing all of you the best of good luck.
Those fools drop dead?
And there you go.
Congratulations, socialists!
Go.
I'm bending over. I'm bending over. Yeah.
Good night, Susie.
Save it, honey. Put it in the bank. I know what's happening.
There you go.
10, 9,
all systems go.
Looking good. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
And I'm on. Good morning. Well, everything can't go perfectly in this world, and today, it definitely didn't. So, this is Craig Duffel, The International Connection. We're on every Sunday morning at 8:30 till 10:30. And I have as my friend and contributor, and also my enemy at the same time, he's everything, he's Bob Dobbs, and he's on the air right now. Go ahead, Bob.
Good morning, Craig. Aloha. Mahalo. I got a topic immediately to go into if you don't have anything.
Well, you know what, Bob? I want to experiment with something.
Okay.
This morning I came in, and usually I have everything prepared, and I did have everything prepared this morning. And I got here, and my whole the whole drive that I have that I use to do have all my preparation on, nothing was on it. So I'm thinking of what are you going to talk about, Bob?
Well, I want to talk about naked short selling.
Naked short selling. How long do you think that'll take you to do, Bob?
Let's say under 2 minutes.
Under 2 minutes. two minutes. I've got 2 minutes, do I? Have you got anything else you could talk about for more than 2 minutes?
In a timely manner.
What do you mean in a timely manner? What do you mean by that?
Well, when I get the time.
What do you mean when you get the time?
When I get 5 minutes, I will bring up another topic.
Well, we haven't got 5 minutes. We got to get on with it now. We can't be hanging around for 5 minutes. We got to do this now.
Okay. Well, do you want me to start?
Well, if you can do so in a timely manner.
Okay, give me 5 minutes.
All right. I'll give you 5 minutes.
All right. What happens is this is quoting a very good article by Lucy Commissar.
Can I just interrupt you just for a second? I'm sorry to interrupt you in such a timely manner, and this will not take me 5 minutes to do.
Go ahead,
Bob. I'm thinking of doing an experiment this morning. I'm going to leave you here alone on the air, and I'm going to go back home, get my stuff, and then come back.
There's no problem.
You're okay with that?
Yeah, but how do I take callers?
You can't.
Okay, so you're gone for 20 minutes?
I don't know whether I'll be gone for 20 minutes, but I'm gonna dash out of here. I'm going to come back as soon as I can. And then I'm going to come back with the bits for the show.
Let me test something here.
Yeah, okay.
How clear is this YouTube?
All right.
I mean, I now have 110 YouTubes out there.
Yeah.
And some of them are really good.
Whoa. Why are you breaking up now when you're doing this?
Oh, I just moved slightly. How's that?
That's okay.
Okay. If I play a YouTube, I want to see if it goes through clearly, because I got lots of good music and good YouTubes to fill in the lack of verbality.
Well, all right. We'll try one, Bob.
Okay. Here we go. I'm going to put it on as loud as possible on my computer and bring it up, and here we go.
What, are you going to do that? Is this in a timely manner?
Yep. Can you hear that?
Yeah, I know. I don't think this is good. This is radio ready. No, I don't think we should do this.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll talk then.
Yeah, okay. So, Bob, here's some topics that I'd like you to discuss. I would like you to discuss the Mumbai attack.
Yes.
While I'm gone. I would like you to discuss naked short selling. In other words, short selling while you're naked. I'd like you to discuss, I think that should, you should be able to do that, shouldn't you?
Yeah, and anything else that sidesteps it.
Yeah, it's your show for the next few minutes, Bob. It's totally yours, as if it wasn't always yours in the first place. But what I'm going to do now, and I've done this before, but Danny was here, where I just disappeared while Bob was talking. Now, he was talking with Danny, but he was more or less just going on his own. I don't think anything else was happening. And I, without Bob knowing, I actually went all the way home, got something, and came all the way back. So I'm going to do it again today.
Yep, November 30th. I have a question. How did you have the intro, which was from last week, with you? How come?
Well, because I think something went wrong. I had everything from last week, but I don't have everything from this week.
Oh, okay.
All right. So I'm off, Bob.
Okay,
I'm off. Okay, I'll talk to you later. And audience, I'll be back soon.
This is Bob Dobbs from Hawaii, international representative, community representative for CKLN. Now, one of the interesting things about the virtual economy is that there is no money exchange. There's no exchange. And there's an article by Lucy Commissar, K-O-M-I-S-A-R, who is occasionally a guest on Dave Emery's show. And she was on about a month ago, and she had done some very good research on the credit default swaps and the crash of Wall Street and all that stuff everybody's been imposed upon by. This is quotes from the transcript of the audio show on Dave Emery's featuring Lucy Commissar. She's talking about how short selling and then naked short selling starts, and where it leads. She says, quote, "It works like this. After the share trade occurs, it goes into the clearing system. If the seller does not have the securities available, The depository steps in with an automatic program that goes through all the available shares on deposit where account holders have said these shares can be loaned out if you need them. The Depository Trust Corporation and the lender get commissions. Now, the Depository Trust Corporation was set up in 1971, and it was the beginning of storing trades, keeping records of trades, not on paper certificates, but in electronic files. So we're talking almost 40 years ago. It sort of limped along in the 70s, but really got going in the early 80s. So what we're talking about here is what happens at the Depository Trust Corporation starting 30 years ago. And to repeat that, if the seller does not have the securities available, there's a whole bunch of shares that other members have deposited in the Depository Trust Corporation, and the seller is able to borrow those to hand them over to the trade, to the buyer. So the Depository Trust Corporation borrows the shares from its member brokerages. That's how it got set up and got this repository or backlog of shares. And they are borrowed to deliver to the buyer. But that's just on paper. They are not really delivered. Shares used to be represented by paper certificates. Now that the Depository Trust Corporation turned them into electronic files and kept the custody, it has made billions of dollars lending them out over and over, getting a fee each time they lend a share. The investor with an account at the lender has an account that says he owns those shares, and the buyer that has received the shares also owns the shares. Now, isn't that interesting? You can't do that. You can't sell something and then still claim you own it. Through this stock lending, you can multiply the number of shares in circulation so the number is greater than the number of shares authorized and outstanding. Now, there's a judgment here. The person makes a commentary. Says this illegal system, even though it is legal technically, this illegal system affects stocks, bonds, currencies, and strategic metals. So if you can keep lending out these shares and calling it the selling of the shares, and the buyer receives those shares and can do things with them, but has not acquired them completely so that the lender keeps them, then the lender can keep reselling the shares. Now, this is called naked short selling, the trade in counterfeit or non-existent shares. And more editorial, this is a massive fraud run by the country's big brokerages and the stock clearinghouse, the Depository Trust Corporation, with the collusion of the Securities and Exchange Commission. That's a value judgment thrown into the fact that the computer electronic economy inevitably has to do it this way. So, in a further explanation, it says short selling takes place when investors sell a stock they don't own in hopes it will fall, and they will buy it more cheaply when they have to deliver to the buyer. Under SEC rules, they have to buy them and deliver them to their purchasers within 3 days, except they often don't. They sell the shares they don't own and don't intend to buy. That is called naked short selling. And since these days investors don't get share documents on official paper, but simply trust their brokerages that their shares are on file, they generally don't know that they've paid out money for nothing. Now, I'm going to run through this again with another example that Lucy Commissar gives. She says, it works like this. You, the listener, are Merrill Lynch. I, the temporary host of International Connection, I am the Lehman Brothers. So you're Merrill Lynch and I'm the Lehman Brothers. You and I decide we're going to short sell a stock. I agree to write a contract to you, you the audience, that says in 5 years I will deliver to you 10 million shares of XYZ company on January 1st. You agree to write a contract to deliver to me 10 million shares on January 2nd. That's in 5 years. You and I never exchanged a dime. We just wrote a contract. We're allowed to hedge that. I can sell 10 million shares of XYZ, you know, after I've written this contract with you, and so can you with your 10 million shares, even though we don't own them. 20 million counterfeit shares just got sold. And at the end, the contracts are shredded. I assume that's in 5 years. The money is made from naked short selling from the price decline of the asset. The most profit is obtained if the security declines to zero. Once they do their hedge, the brokers then can sell the contract to another party, to their favorite hedge fund client. then that client is allowed to hedge again the risk of the 10 million shares, and on it goes. Then the value judgment by the journalist. This is legalized fraud. Now, how could this have been set up? Well, McLuhan used to say that the electronic environment, TV, radio, what we call one-way broadcast media or analog media, that environment cannot be bought, sold, or stolen. That is technically why, in the 30s, money became public property, and most industrialized countries put the population on, quote, welfare, through socialism, fascism, Roosevelt's New Deal, or communism. The point is that nobody could totally lose contact with the money paper economy. You were given a basic stipend from the 30s on, and the ownership of money before that by the, quote, Illuminati and the capitalist class, they were put on the sidelines on one level. So the massive effect of electricity, television and early computers and radio and satellite led to this colossal welfare state where money was the poor man's credit card. Now, that was okay until the digital environment, or what I call the chip landscape, the computer landscape, went around the electronic analog broadcasting environment and electronic economy, early electronic economy, and basically people living on credit cards. But when the digital environment, symbolized by the Depository Trust Corporation, which in 1971 started to keep records of share trades on electronic files, as that increased the dominance of the digital structure, digital technology in daily economic business, say from the late 70s into the 80s and 90s, it went around the electronic environment, and the electronic environment, which technically could not be bought, sold, or stolen, could be temporarily bought, sold, or stolen, just like in television, which was relatively free and inexpensive for people, was by the 80s started to be sold through the cable networks as pay TV, pay-per-view and all that stuff, HBO. The ability of the digital environment to go around the electronic environment and then claim property in it and then retrieve the capitalism and the selling of time and airtime and advertising fragmented the electronic economy and led to the incredible scintillating supernova of information environment we have today, but all of it based on this temporary idea that I could buy and sell something that could not technically beneath that be bought and sold. So that's an example of the digital environment and how it... No, I will say what I just described from Lucy Komisar is an example of how the digital environment propped up a virtual private identity, a fraudulent but technically possible under electronic conditions, so not really illegal, only illegal in reference to previous laws, constitutional papers. The fact that I could pretend that I am my own space, my own digital zone, think of the millions of day traders that jumped into the economy the last 15 years because they could work within this electronic digital illusory share filing transfers. That situation created what Arthur Kroger calls a virtual self, the virtual private identity retrieved under the illusion that I'm buying, even though you're buying and selling too, and we're not really exchanging anything other than typing and communication and interaction. That did make people feel that they were on paper, there was no background to the paper, but on paper you were worth millions. So that newly abundant virtual class finally collapsed over the last few months, and in that period when the middle class was disappearing over the last 30 years, now everybody's back in the middle class. They can only own one house. They don't have any shares, and they're struggling to survive in a barter economy. So we've rebuilt the temporary middle class as the virtual class disappeared over the last few months. Now, that is what I used to call on the old International Connection show bottom-up analysis. That's using technology to see how it affects, using the technology's effects as a model for analysis of causes of events. So that is the example of bottom-up. Now I'm going to give an example of top-down. the kind of approach that our callers here, Greg's callers, the International Connection callers, like. Heather is an expert on this angle, the top-down control. And Greg asked me to talk about Mumbai. So let's go to one of the more advanced information sources on the top-down view of what's been happening. And that's a person named Tom Hennigan. He bills himself as an international intelligence expert. So if you go to his MySpace, his new news, his back-breaking news, he calls it, hot, explosive, back-breaking news, is titled, Blowback on Subcontinent, Worldwide Intelligence War Descends into Anarchy. Now, here's what he says. This was posted yesterday, November 29th. It can now be reported that on Wednesday, November 26th, a paramilitary team of 70 Pakistani ISI soldiers arrived in Mumbai, or what used to be called Bombay, by sea on the CIA-ISI registered MV Alpha and proceeded on military-style speedboats to the Indian shore and immediately traveled to the command and control headquarters for the paramilitary operation at the Jewish Center Nariman House. That's in Mumbai, N-A-R-I-M-A-N. 3 days of food awaited the terrorists, along with sophisticated military-style blackberries, grenades, and other sophisticated explosive devices to be used in the attacks. Aided and abetting the paramilitary team was a high-tech television monitoring device in the Nariman House in the Jewish Center that allowed the terrorist group to monitor the movement of Indian police and the Indian Anti-Terrorist Task Force that had used the Nariman House in the past for anti-terrorist surveillance inside Mumbai. The liaison between the Indian Anti-Terrorist Task Force and the Israeli Shin Bet, which was used in training of the Indian Anti-Terrorist Task Force, were two Jewish rabbis with dual citizenship who previously lived in New York City. So then Tom Hennigan quotes an article. It's titled, The Mossad Strikes in Mumbai. And this is by Brother Nathaniel Kapney. I don't know who that is, but Tom Hennigan quotes him. It says, the initial firing began at the Shabad Nariman House, an easy access for Mossad operatives. Hindus of the Nariman area spoke live on several TV channels saying that for 2 years, suspicious activities were taking place in the Shabad Nariman House, raising concern regarding Israel's involvement in the Hindutva Revolution, which is defined as the current opposition government. Then Tom stops quoting from that article and gives you the link so that you can read up more on that. But I'm going to continue on what his back-breaking explosive column says. Now, this is not my opinion. This is the recorded pattern recognition of Tom Hennigan. He says, this is not the first time the Israeli Mossad used rabbis in black ops and other nefarious activities, given the role of Rabbi Dr. Zachary in sending the anthrax post on September 11th, or sending the anthrax post September 11th, a chemical attack which was used to deter proper investigation of the 911 black op attack on the United States. The anthrax attack was also used to intimidate U.S. Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens from going forward with the proof of the theft of the year 2000 presidential election from the vice president, now duly elected President Albert Gore, Jr. Tom Hennigan has been going on for years that the real president of the United States is Albert Gore because he was the legitimately elected one, not what he calls Bush fraud. So, now this is, we're talking about the idea that somebody in some secret bureaucracy can pull off these massive spectacles of terrorism, and Tom Hennigan is looking at it as a top-down source of causes, that individuals inside the hidden networks can pull this off. I don't know if this is true, but it's interesting that he's able to quote certain articles that at least are in the press over there in India that add some credence maybe to what he's saying, possible credence. So he says, Justice Stevens' mail was actually intercepted and illegally held by Israeli Mossad agent and traitor, current Secretary of Homeland Security Michael Chertoff. Then he says, now, of course, it's going to get worse. You know it is not going to get better. I apologize for only doing this verbal monologue. Greg is away. He'll be back soon. We could have all kinds of music underneath or interruptions or phone calls. But bear with me. I'm trying to make it interesting, the verbal content here. So here is the continuation of Tom Hennigan's column. Yeah, his column. You know it is not going to get better. The paramilitary group also received from their liaison group at the Nariman House 60 Indian anti-terrorist task force uniforms, which would be used in the terrorist attacks and allowed the Pakistani paramilitary team to disguise themselves as Indian security officials while they were conducting their attacks. The joint U.S.-French intelligence task force, headquartered on European soil, now reports. So the U.S.-French intelligence task force are the good guys in Tom Hennigan's world. They give him the real stuff that the mainstream media is suppressing. So they tell him, and he's reporting it to us, that the Nariman House had been used to provide intelligence to the paramilitary group while they were training for this operation off the shores of Somalia. Intelligence provided to the paramilitary group included casing out the targets for their attacks. Then Tom says, at this hour, which is yesterday, NBC General Electric and its bought and paid for Bush Clinton crime family syndicate Defense Intelligence, which Alex Witt, so this reporter on MSNBC, Alex Witt, he's saying, is once again propagating the big lie. Alex Witt is alleging there were only 10 terrorists and that a fishing trawler, not the MV Alpha, was used to transport the terrorists to Mumbai. That he has a qualifier. Item. The British-owned fishing trawler was a recently released vessel taken hostage by the Somalia pirates. It is now being used as an intelligence agency prop to cover up the role of the Pakistani ISI-CIA-registered MV Alpha in actually transporting the paramilitary team. Then Tom says, of course, this makes no sense. I guess talking about Alex Witt's report. This makes no sense, given this operation was scripted and planned at least 2 years in advance. There's no way these alleged terrorists, also known as the paramilitary group, would jeopardize their operation based on hijacking a fishing trawler and then using the trawler as the means of transport for the paramilitary group and using military-style aquatic speedboats to take them to the Indian shore. Clearly, a cargo ship met the logistical needs of the paramilitary team. The big lie from the National Security Agency-controlled media is that these were rafts, not speedboats. At this hour, some of this bogus intelligence is being given to the Indian government, not by a captured terrorist. I've heard about this. They have some captured terrorists. Not by a captured terrorist, but an actual FBI informant who actually walked out of the Nariman House Jewish Center unharmed. Tom Hennigan continues, as we bring you this intelligence briefing, the U.S. FBI, headed by Robert Mueller, is sending an FBI task force to India to engage in the obstruction of justice. As reported in our previous intelligence briefing, the illegal resident of the White House, Bushrod, continues to blackmail and bribe the Indian Prime Minister in regards to blaming these paramilitary attacks on Bushrod's partner in crime and patsy, the alleged Al-Qaeda. He has Al-Qaeda quotes. Note, the Indian Prime Minister and his intelligence agencies now have smoking gun in quotes, proof linking a secret covert directorate, an arm of the Pakistani ISI, in directing and manipulating terrorist and paramilitary groups inside Pakistan. That secret directorate, which has liaison to both Israeli and British intelligence, as well as the U.S. CIA, operates without any knowledge or oversight from the current democratically elected Pakistani government. As reported in the previous intelligence briefing, it is unclear whether the Indian government will allow this team to actually land on Indian soil. So, as an aside, well, I'm reading you this description of top-down causes of a recent television spectacle. Let's remember that right now, in the digital landscape, people are share-swapping millions of shares and able to claim they didn't sell them, and the buyer can claim they owned them and move them on and not give up those. So the bottom-up environment is going on right now, creating all kinds of other effects that threaten nationalist countries with this flight capital, flight share, digital virtual self, Niagara Fall of transactions going on. That is leading to more frustration. So that's the hidden ground on another level of the next terrorist spectacle.
Hey, Bob. Meanwhile, hey, Bob.
Oh, you made it?
I'm back.
Can I just finish this paragraph?
Yeah, just finish that paragraph, and then we'll start the show again.
Yes. He says, as reported in the previous intelligence briefing, it is unclear whether the Indian government will allow this team to actually land on Indian soil. Then he says, previous media reports during this paramilitary siege had quoted the Israeli ambassador to India stating that there were as many as 9 Israeli citizens present in the Nariman House. This was a deflection and ruse to disguise and actually signal to the FBI informant, now in Indian custody, to assassinate the 2 Jewish rabbis in order to silence them from eventually revealing the role of both Israeli and British intelligence in the coordinated paramilitary operation. So, Greg, I'm going to end by saying that I'm reading from Tom Hennigan's column, and that's Hennigan, H-E-N-E-G-H-A-N. Google it and go and finish reading what I'm presenting here. But this is the top-down way of explaining events.
But, Bob, yes. You know we can't believe a single word that guy says.
Yes, but we can't believe any of the economy that's transacting. Did you hear what I said when you were running down to your home?
No.
Okay, I explained the first...
It was all I could do to stay on my bicycle.
Okay, I just thought maybe it's something in your ear. But anyways, I explained the virtual economy, which is based on nothing and can't be believed. It is real as a chip environment of the naked short selling. So I won't go into it, but you can hear the archive. And
yes,
hear
I'll go back and listen to it as a listener.
Yeah, I'm saying that true and false are not issues in an information overload environment. It's just interesting that this is a pattern that one person who is consistent in being on top of what's going on, supposedly, and this is what he had to say about Mumbai. You asked me to do something about Mumbai. I had something right here in my cornucopia of Google. And I was able to provide instant content showing that, in a way, radio is obsolete. I mean, you could have just gone to the computer and heard this content.
You got a point there.
Radio vital again, Greg. So
yes.
You start the show.
All right, I'll start the show again. Here it is.
They would be happy to put a warning on an album that said explicit lyrics, parental guidance.
Let me ask you this. If we have categories and labels and rating systems for movies, why are you opposed to a similar rating system for records?
Well, if a person is hired as an actor for a film, whatever they rate the film doesn't hurt the actor as a person. He is a hired hand and he's pretending. If a person makes an album and he's written the song or he's performing the song and his name is on the album and his picture is on the album, if you rate the album, you're rating the person and you apply a stigma to that individual, and that's not fair.
As a regular radio listener, I feel I must protest most strongly as often as possible. Yours sincerely, Brigadier General Titfield Thunderbolt, MC, GPO, PVC, DSO, and Looney.
Our story opens today in a really ugly building in the really dreadful little country of Canada.
Okay.
Team, I welcome you all to the 24th annual general meeting of your company.
Okay.
The year 2007-8 has seen your company achieving satisfactory performance. We could clock revenues of over $1.2 only from our base businesses. I will leave it to your CEO to give you a detailed account of performance of various businesses for the year under review.
Okay.
As you all know, your company is now in its 25th year of operations and will complete 25 years of its existence. I look back at these 25 years with a sense of pride and a great deal of satisfaction for all that your company has achieved.
Okay.
As far as your company is concerned, let me assure you, we, the promoters, the board of directors, the management team, and the entire family of more than 500 employees are fully committed to our becoming a global company. We are not open to selling out our company. However, we are open to any kind of collaboration, partnership, or alliance that would help realize our vision and in the process create greater shareholder value. At the young age of 25, your company has a lot more to accomplish in the years to come. We, the board, the management team, and the employees are all geared up to take your company to the next orbit of growth. I know some of you have been with us right from the beginning. I thank you all and request your continued presence in our journey into the next 25 years. Ladies and gentlemen, let me take this opportunity to thank all our business associates for their continued support and all employees for their commitment and contributions. Thank you.
Okay, show's on. I don't feel comfortable if I haven't played the opening. How do you feel about that, Bob? Are you there, Bob? Are you there? Oh, there you are.
In a timely manner.
Oh, you're on that again, are you?
Okay. 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 I think that was tremendous what you presented there musically, Greg.
Thank you.
How did you find that?
I don't know. I just put it together last night.
And it was psychic. I mean, if I had presented my virtual naked short selling after the opening, if you had done it at 8:30, it would have matched with that Indian shareholders meeting that you were playing.
Yeah, the annual general meeting?
Yes, and yeah. There it is, supplementing what I did.
Yep. Hey, everybody. Well, I've come in to do the show, gone home, and come back again. Thank you, but you had a half hour Bob there.
Okay.
Okay. And so you had you had your church for the morning, everybody. You were in the Church of the Subgenius, Bob style, Bob Dobbs style.
Greg, yes. You left us in a timely manner and returned in a very timely manner.
That's right. That's timely manner. That's going home, all the way home, getting all the information that I thought I had with me and bring it back again.
And it was worth getting. Good stuff.
In a sense, I got here in a timely manner, but it wasn't timely enough. I had to do it again. Well, we'll make up for lost time.
Yeah, we got a special attempt at a phone call today.
That's right. We're going to attempt that this morning. Well, thank you.
Did you hear anything about what happened to the guy in Venezuela last week?
Not really. He didn't get back in touch with me. I don't know. I don't understand it. I don't understand. The foreign correspondents are difficult. I don't know.
But I think it was just because he got you thinking about Venezuela and you broadcasting that CKLN-like, community radio-like atmosphere in English. That was pretty interesting.
It was worth doing.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, it's been a tremendous week of news. Incredible stuff going on around the world. And, of course, the top story of the week is Boy George goes on trial in London for false imprisonment of an escort. Yes, a Norwegian escort told a court Monday that Boy George manacled him to a bedroom wall and beat him with a metal chain after accusing him of hacking into his computer. That's tough punishment, huh?
Oh.
That's very draconian of him. The former culture...
When did this happen?
This just happened. Well, I don't know when the... I'll get to it in a moment. Now, as you might know, Boy George is the former Culture Club singer, but Jeff Wiseman rushed in here as soon as he heard it. As soon as he heard that Boy George had manacled somebody to a bedroom wall and beat him with a metal chain...
What kind of metal chain?
For just hacking into a cube. This just shows you, don't ever even think about hacking into somebody's computer. They'll... manacle you to a bedroom wall and then beat you with a metal chain.
That's incredible.
It is incredible. It's unbelievable.
That's big news. But it proves that the chip body, the chip landscape, is part of your body, and George took that as a personal invasion.
Right. Well, there might have been a personal invasion going on at some other time, but we don't know. He's on trial for the false imprisonment of 29-year-old Auden Carlson. And he's standing, Boy George is standing under trial, under his own name, George O'Dowd. Carlson told London's Snaresbrook Crown Court that he met the singer through a website and went to his London home for a naked photo shoot.
Naked church selling.
Can't say I've ever done anything like that before. After the encounter, Boy George sent a series of emails accusing Carlson of hacking into his computer. But Carlson nonetheless agreed to return for a second photo session several weeks later in April 2007.
Big mistake.
Yeah, it was a big mistake. And Carlson told the jury that when he arrived, Boy George and another man held him down and beat him before the singer handcuffed him to a hook in the bedroom wall. George was slapping me and beating me and punching me and screaming things, Carlson said. Or should I have said, George was slapping me, beating me, and punching me and screaming things, Carlson said. See, he was Norwegian. Carlson said he was able to escape by unscrewing the hook. This is a cunning ploy to unscrew the hook and running for the door. Good move. I took a bit of time getting the door open, and he had a metal chain that he was hitting me with, Carlson said. Carlson said he ran into the street clad only in his underwear. The court was shown photographs of red welts on Carlson's head and injuries to his arm, which he said had been inflicted during the attack. Boy George's androgynous image and powerful voice made him an 80s icon and gave Culture Club hits including Karma Chameleon and, quote, and Do You Really Want to Hurt Me? I guess he did really want to hurt somebody. But the singer has struggled for
years. Zappa made a lot of fun of that phrase back in 1984. You can see it on his Vemurus video.
But the singer has struggled for years with drug problems. So here's a strange event that happened in his life. In 2006, he was ordered to do community service with New York City's Department of Sanitation after pleading guilty to false reporting of an incident. He called police with a false report of a burglary at his Lower Manhattan apartment. And the responding officers found cocaine inside. Just not a good move to bring the police into your life unnecessarily now, is it? So that's Boy George. That's the big story of the week. Now, the other big story, actually, I'm wondering why it isn't a big story. And that is the hijacking of this gigantic oil tanker, Saudi oil tanker, the Sirius Star. And today... this very day is the deadline for when the pirates are going to hear back from the owners. And they're demanding $25 million for this Saudi supertanker, which was seized 2 weeks ago. Now, there's an amazing lack of news about this and also a lack of commando raids or anything of the sort that you would imagine would go on with all of these countries that are involved there. So for some reason, they're holding off on this one. They hijacked the pirates hijacked the 330-meter-long Sirius Star on November 15th and have given the owners of the giant oil carrier up to Sunday to pay the ransom. Now, over the last few weeks, I can play you what the mainstream media was doing about this in terms of reporting, and they seem rather glib and blithe about talking about it. Here's Bill Griffith on CNBC.
One of the stories we're following today is the hijacking, apparently, or I guess you call it that, by a Somali pirates off the east coast of Africa of this Saudi super tanker that's been full of 2 million barrels of oil. This, by the way, these are not the pirates posing in front of the tanker. We've been commenting on that. This was when it was commissioned, back when it was first built. But it's a crazy story, and nobody can agree on whether it's actually having an effect on oil prices today. There was a pop in oil when word got out about this hijacking, but the oil price has since fallen back. But we'll keep you updated on this story as it progresses throughout the day here.
Dennis is shaking his head.
This is like the dog that chases after a bus every day and finally catches it. Now what am I going to do? These guys are thinking, what the heck were we thinking?
They're a little late on this one here.
Yeah.
So it's all a bit of a joke that they've got this gigantic oil tanker. And here's T.J. Holmes over at CNN.
You've been hearing a lot about pirates, and we're not talking about Johnny Depp type characters. We're talking about the nasty guys off the coast of Africa, the Horn of Africa, over in Somalia now, been holding the latest right now we know of is a Saudi-owned tanker. $100 million worth of oil on this thing being held right now. Offering or asking for a ransom, these pirates are. Now, these pirates have actually seized some 90-plus or attacked at least 90-plus vessels over the past 12 months. I do have about 17 right now that they're still holding.
You know, if they start a BET news service, a whole BET news channel, I think T.J. Holmes is right in there. But,
I'm thinking that Saudi oil is pretty important. Could the Mumbai terrorists...
It's Bob Dobbs.
A distraction from the Saudis.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that voice on?
What was that?
That was Andy. Hi, Andy.
Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Andy. Go ahead.
Good morning, Bob Dobbs.
Good morning, Andy. Hey, glad to have you back.
I tell you, I want to commend Greg on his exit and leaving. We had him timed when he left the studio at 8:41, and he was back at 9:01.
Yeah,
he timed it here on the clock. That's 20 minutes there and back. Greg, were the red lights in your favor coming back?
I got one red light, and most everything was good.
Good. And, of course, you had the wind at your back, that's for sure, in both ways.
One way I had the wind at my back.
Yes.
Yeah.
We got a new land speed record at CKLN Radio for a host leaving on a live show, going home, returning back in under 20 minutes.
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it?
Did you have to pee in a jar when you came back to see if there's any steroids involved?
You know, I've been surprised the last couple of days with my dexterity or my energy. I ran for a streetcar yesterday and felt good about it.
You know, you're quite nimble in your old age.
I am. I was feeling a bit poorly earlier this year after, you know, the incredible strain of our legal action, but I think I'm gaining my strength back now.
Yes.
It's taken a year, but I think I'm getting it back.
And Andy, no compliment.
You know, keeping the audience attentive through this suspended and anticipation of your safe return.
Right.
Also, this boy George in the news, because this is just in time for his release before Christmas of a 4-CD box set, The Life and Times of Boy George, or it's subtitled Living Over a Laundromat for Too Damn Long. And that's a 4-CD box set just in time for Christmas, so look for it on your shelves, Boy George Collection. That's all for now. I'm challenging all Daves to phone in, and especially Dave 4, if he gets a chance, give us a call.
Well, I have a feeling that Dave 4 is going to phone in, but that's just a thought of mine.
Welcome back.
Just a bit of a prognostication on my part. Thank you very much, Andy.
Greg.
Thank you very much, Andy. Anyway, Bob, what were you saying?
Greg, Andy could not hear me?
I don't know whether he could hear you or not. I can't tell.
I just wanted to complain but just point out that, of course, the drama was you rather than all that astounding information I put out while you were gone.
Right. But
Andy did thank me for something, I think, in there. I'm not sure.
Yeah, you were fishing for a compliment, I think.
Yeah, I thought that, I'd like to know a reaction, but obviously the content of CKLN is not as important as the drama of the personalities and the programmers who have been here for 20 or 30 years.
That's right, and their machinations running back and forth between their house and... and
their private lives. Yeah. The whole, you know... What strikes me is Boy George proves again that Lynn LaRouche is probably correct, that rock and roll culture is just corrupting to the mind, the soul, and the being. You know, it's just not good for people overall to be in that industry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ochre. And I'm not saying okay. O-C-H-R-E. I'm not saying ochre.
No,
I'm going
no.
ochre.
Yeah.
Ochre.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, Greg, that was pretty nice of Andy to nail it exactly what the drama was. I mean, you kind of like don't know what to say next.
That's right. Oh, I do know what to say next. And now?
I did.
And now? And I know what to say next. And now?
That double-dyed villain, that prince of no goods, that Schlemiel.
Bob Dobbs.
Yes, Greg, I am in touch with our guest.
You are, yes?
Okay. Yeah, who's in Mumbai, and he says, nothing happening on the Earl. That's the chat line. I don't know if he means he can't get on.
I see him.
Okay, he just means nobody's commenting. So I just emailed him, said everything's okay. We'll have him on in about 15 minutes. So we're in touch with him.
Yeah, good. I see him there. I've just messaged him. Very good. We're using 21st century technology here to discuss things across continents.
Well, what is he listed as? He's not Jim the Catholic, is he?
Isn't he?
No. Okay, he says, hi, Greg. I don't know. Maybe.
Is that Jim? Is that...
No, his name is Bob. Maybe he's being careful. I mean, maybe it's tough security over there, you know, over there in Mumbai, you know.
I wonder who Jim the Catholic is. We got Jim the Catholic on the chat line. Hey, why don't you type to Jim the Catholic while I do some stuff? Find out who Jim the Catholic is there, Bob. Will you?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. So getting back to the Sirius Star and so on, there have been many, many of these ships pirated over the last little while, the Sirius Star being the largest of them, and I guess that's what got everybody's attention, but even though people are laughing about it. Again, there's a $25 million ransom, and Mohammed Syed, the leader of the group holding the Sirius Star, told the news agency, though the ultimatum for the payment of the $25 million is about to expire, we are still expecting to get a favorable reply. We are securing the tanker as well as the Harar de Hare area. We don't want anything bad to happen. And he says it's that area is the coastal village in northern Somalia. Negotiations continue, said Mr. Syed, but we don't know when they'll be finalized.
More important matters, Jim the Catholic says he's from North Carolina.
Oh, okay. Well, hello there.
He teaches fifth grade math and science. I bet you my YouTube's led him to you.
Oh, you think so? What made him, how could he ever find this little area we have? I haven't really promoted it, but does he know about the show? Is he listening to the program right now?
Yeah. I asked him, are you in Toronto? He says, I am. I said, on the air you are. Mm. And then he says, I'm from North Carolina.
Oh, that's good. We've got an international listenership, or at least a continental listenership. So, Ethiopia.
Are you getting my point that this whole Mumbai spectacle is a distraction from the Saudi oil problem?
I mean the oil tanker?
Yeah, the oil tanker is really a bigger story, and they have to deal with it off camera, so they've got this terrorist to distract everybody in the same period.
Well, it seems strange that they don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
And here they are. These are, so it's the Sirius Star, the Stolt Strength, the African Sanderling, and the Yasa Neslihan are together home to 64 seafarers. Two-thirds of them are from the Philippines. And with the taking of the Sirius Star and its 25-strong crew a little before 9 a.m. on November 15th, the number of international seafarers floating in hijack limbo off the coast of Somalia rose to almost 300. I don't know why they think that all of those people are doing the limbo out there on those ships, but it rose to almost 300. And the 300 people kidnapped. And the issue of piracy searched the top of news bulletins around the world. Well, you wouldn't know it, would you, really? So I do find this strange, Bob. Now, this is an interesting part. One of the pirates.
Can I throw this part in? Because this is what you sent me last night. I think you're going to point out.
The pirate
who identified himself as Daybad or Bad Day said the crew were being treated as prisoners of war. He added, quote, we captured the ship for ransom, of course, but we don't have anybody reliable to talk to directly about it.
I know. It's strange, isn't it? That first of all, this character, this pirate named David, has a whole crew as prisoners. And he's holding it for ransom, this David.
Isn't David a staff member, C.K.L.N.?
No. It's a pirate who's holding the Sirius Star.
It is
pronounced exactly the same way. And he's got everybody for ransom out there.
He can't get any coverage.
No.
He won't bring the cameras so he can make some threats.
Dr. Femi Olgener, a lawyer for the Turkish shipping company that owns the Yasa Neslihan, said the ship's 20 Turkish crew members were in good spirits.
Ulgener said the pirates who attacked the ship, which was laden with 77,000 tons of iron ore, had popped up out of the blue at midday on October 29th. Like many others, he had no idea how long the hijacking would go on. Our only source is the other examples, and so the situation could last for between 60 and 70 days. That's optimistic, isn't it? So there you have it, the Sirius Star out there waiting to be appropriated again, maybe for $25 million. Lloyd's of London thinks that they're going to pay the ransom because they just want to get on with things.
But, well, the
but today's the deadline.
The nut Tom Hennigan, he says that the terrorists came from this area, the Somalia area.
Area.
Yeah.
Well,
the Gulf of Aden.
Well, I hope David is safe there, the pirate David. I hope everything works out okay. I hope nobody gets hurt, that the one party gets their $25 million and the other party gets their tanker back. And then the oil is fairly distributed all around the world, as it should be. So any other thoughts, Bob, before we go to break?
No, I just got the name David Cooper going through my mind for some reason. I don't know why.
I don't know why either.
I think I brought that up in one show. I got an email from my foster daughter, who is responding to the fact that there's 111 YouTubes about me on YouTube. She says, got any ideas for song titles, lyric phrases that smack of sex but aren't graphic or obvious, i.e. shiver, rock hard, etc., double meanings? Zappa-esque would be awesome, too. So I guess she's writing a song. Anyways, this is where we can. I can be on the air talking to the audience. I can be getting emails from other people from around the world. Jim the Catholic, you know, multi-level communication going on here.
Yeah, it's great.
Most people.
We should get everybody else in on it, you know?
Oh, look, he actually says, he said I teach fifth grade. This is Jim the Catholic, math and science. And I said I never did that. So he goes, so where are you guys from?
Really? So he doesn't know. He doesn't know that we're on the air. Go tell him, go tell him, to go to www.ckln.fm, and he can go listen to the show.
And our guest is now on. Hello, Bob. Robert here. So our guest in Mumbai is on.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, everybody's here. And then someone says, visitor 3541, I says, I thought this was an audio program. Now they're starting to get confused.
Well, yes, there are people, just to explain, there are people who are tuning in on a certain line, a certain text line that I have. And let me see. Let me see what's going on here. We've got Jim the Catholic, and we've got visitor 35418. So is our listener 34518, is or 35418, are they listening in Mumbai at the moment?
No. Rob is Mumbai. See, hello, Bob. Bob here. That's Rob. That is our guest.
Right.
Oh, no, it didn't say Rob is now known as visitor. Oh, I see. You're right. Okay, I thought this was an audio program. All right, it's our guest in Mumbai is wondering what medium to use.
Yeah, well, they have to go to are you there, Bob?
Yes.
Oh, they have to go to if you want to listen on the Internet, yeah, you go to www.ckln.fm, and you click on the Listen Live on the Internet, and you're away.
Are we calling him in within 5 minutes?
Yes. Yes, in a timely manner. We're going to be phoning him in a timely manner.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. I've just got to get things set up here. We got a call, and I'll take it. Shall I, Bob? Yeah, I'll take that call. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to tell Bob, because he was lamenting that nobody was really concerned with the content of what he was reading while you were gone. And they'd rather concentrate on how long you took to leave and come back. The reason why nobody really wants to talk about that is because to acknowledge the fact that we live on top of a virtual economy with virtual money, money that doesn't really exist, if we acknowledge that, we're all going to realize that none of us don't really have any money, and that's depressing. And so we'd rather talk about comedy or stuff that, you know, isn't going to make us feel so bad.
I agree exactly. That's why there's such a superfluous abundance of TV entertainment. That's the old TV medium is filling in as an anti-environment and an anesthetic for the anxiety of virtual nothingness.
That's right. I think that when I got out of high school and I started working, and that was 20 years ago when we first really started to see the influx of bank cards, or at least the mainstreaming of bank cards. And, you know, you would get, you wouldn't even have a bank book. I would just get a statement mailed to me every 2 weeks from TD Bank telling me how much money I did or did not have. And back then, TD was having a lot of problems with people's accounts. They would just, money would just go missing out of people's accounts and stuff. And they would just say, oh, there were the computer glitches. To me, that was the beginning of when you could have something or not have something based on electronic information. You were never seeing the money anyways. The money was direct deposited into your account. You never saw it. And then you went and you got it from a bank machine. So that, to me, was the start of where, well, yeah, you have money, but you really don't. We'll just tell you that you have money, and then we'll tell you that you don't. And that's how we exist. So,
and that
now,
led to the countervailing anesthetic of extreme sports.
It just goes on and on. There's as soon as extreme sports becomes dull and boring, then you just come up with something else to distract us.
Good
we'll
point.
We'll get back and, to and live executions eventually, which, you know, really capture people's attention.
That's a good point. It started with speech. Speech created problems, so we had to create writing. Then writing forced us to make printed books, and then we had to make movies. This is the history of the tensions of technological growth. You hit it on the nail.
All right, Bob, we're going to go to break and call her, and when we come back, we'll be doing something else.
Thank you very much, and we hope we helped you out a little bit. Oops. We hope we helped you out a little bit. We'll be right back. There you go.